Welcome, everybody, to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. I'm so excited to share the stories of these individuals, their stories of triumph and encouragement and inspiration to move through some really challenging things in their lives, whether it is learning to read or even just graduating from school, getting a job, being able to find their strengths that they have within them to be successful. And absolutely, I want to foster an understanding that their success is not in spite of their dyslexia, but it is because of it. And so I'm so glad to have you listening to these stories today. Today on the Dyslexically Successful podcast, we will be speaking with William Manzanares, who is an entrepreneur as well as an author. And today we will talk a bit about his book, but just about his struggles in general. And believe it or not, he is an entrepreneur and has owned many businesses throughout his lifetime, and he still cannot read. He cannot read phonetically. So you may be wondering, how is that possible that one can own businesses and actually even write a book and yet can't read phonetically? So I think you'll learn a lot from William here, and some of the things that we talk about may be a little bit difficult to hear, especially if you're newer to the world of dyslexia, but I want you just to keep an open mind as you listen to William and I talk. And one big thing that I do want you to take away from this is that it is okay to let your kid be disappointed. It is okay to let your kid have some failures, have some mistakes, have some struggles, because truly it is through those struggles that your child will develop a resilience. And of course, you know, I know as parents, we're afraid that our kids won't develop that resilience, but we can be certain that if we don't give them a chance to develop that resilience, they won't either. So, you know, it's one thing to help support and stretch your kids to that next level. It's another thing to take away all of the obstacles, so that it's just easier. And that might feel good in the moment, but really we're not doing our children a service for them in the future. So that's kind of a tough topic to talk about. It's one that I personally struggled with over the years. But here's William. Welcome to the Dyslexically Successful podcast. Today on the episode, we will be talking with an author and an entrepreneur, William Manzanares. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So on this podcast, we talk about neurodiverse individuals and how they learn differently and the struggles that they've had and how they've overcome some of those struggles. So why don't you begin by just telling us a little bit more about yourself, and we'll get on from there.
I think the way I like to introduce myself was because someone else introduced me this way, as a serial entrepreneur. I didn't even know what that was when I was in school. I just knew I wanted to be a business owner since the time I was a little kid. And so that's what I do. I've operated, owned, closed more businesses than anyone else I personally know. And my newest venture was writing the book, I Can't Read. And I actually did that because of some things I do at one of my companies. I made people read a book to get a job. And over time, I was trying to push the love of books on employees, and it backfired a little bit. There was some pushback. And then I shared my story of why I wanted them to read more. And that was kind of how we led to meeting you and how I'm on the show.
Right. No, that's great. I did read your book. Thank you very much for sending me the Audible copy. I think that was so nice of you to offer that. In fact, I am part of Refuge Reads, and we reached out to you, and you supplied us with actual hard copies to have for our parents and family. So we wanted to extend a big thank you for your generosity there. Reading your book was interesting because, like many dyslexic individuals, so many of the similarities come up in the story. And so some of the things, not everything that you said, but some of the things I completely identified with. And I think that's so interesting how we are living with this challenge, and yet we have such similar paths that we've traveled. And obviously things that our interests take us different places, but so many experiences have shaped what we do. And then now, as we find out about dyslexia and how we find out how so many other people struggle to read, like I personally, the reason for this podcast, want to reach out to so many people to get that message out that it is okay to be this way and that you can still have so many successes and which I guess kind of brings me to the next question. When did you actually learn that you were dyslexic?
That is interesting story, and I talk about a little bit in my book, and I left a lot of vagueness in the book, first of all. Have you noticed that the book was geared for those who can't read and people like the VG in the intro? He was a homeless fellow who can out phonetically read me, and I can't phonetically read to this day, and I've made that pretty clear. I think, like you said, some of the people can relate and some can't. I didn't write this for dyslexics. My journey was to talk about the reading struggle I felt, and along the way of digesting, devouring, analyzing every audio book available on dyslexia, I said, wait a minute. All these common traits. Wait a minute. Oh my God. If I had my companies, when I was describing my brain and how it worked or how I could read audiobooks at super speed, if I had a doctor in the audience, they would have said, oh, you're dyslexic. This is classic dyslexia. No one labeled me like that in school. I was just the kid who was scared to tell everyone I couldn't read, who became the adult who was scared. And the few people I did tell, two of my friends helped, someone else really didn't. I didn't mention that much in the book, but who do you tell? Who do you tell? It, you feel stupid, you feel less than, and you feel like you missed something in school that everyone else got. So I didn't know the word dyslexia until my 30s. And I found that there's people my age who didn't know it at the same time. It wasn't until I've heard, read some stories and talked to people who, when their kids were being diagnosed, I think you were one of them. When your kid was being diagnosed, you noticed, wait a minute, what is what? That's when I learned. But the cool factor was I'm a positive outlook on life kind of person, if you can see anything I talk about. So I looked at all the positive traits of dyslexia and said, yeah, because if you want to focus on the negative of phonetic reading, I don't. I just call it out now that no, it's still something I'm going to deal with for the rest of my life. But that's what I brought up with technologies and other things. But yeah, that's the long-winded, didn't know what I had in school. It's why when we're in these groups and we talk to young ones or parents, if you know your kid's dyslexic, you have way more advantage than you and I had. You know what to do now rather than what we had to do to survive.
Yes. And that one theme that I felt throughout your book was an intuitive sense. I feel like you have a real strong intuitive sense of what you need to move forward. And that's kind of, I think it's hard to teach that. What would you say about like how you figured out these strategies to move forward and to move toward success?
Well, in the school days, the biggest one was counting the desk. And I found that there's other people who, because of this book, they said, oh, I did the same thing. And I was like, how do people who've never met, never discussed anything before, never were told to do this in survival mode, fake it through public readings in school the same way? And for me, it was just not that embarrassment. Mm-hmm. Social conformity, you want to talk about embarrassing. I mean, kids do help. And I know I was the kid who struggled, but I'm competitive. So if I heard someone struggling more than me in class, I didn't want to be the one at the bottom. So I practiced and faked it, which kind of put the chip on my shoulder through my later years in school. It made me feel, well, if I can make it, what excuse does anyone else have? And that chip on your shoulder kind of alienates you from others who don't have that intuitive sense, because not all dyslexics have the same common traits. There's a lot of traits, and they've said that there's not, but mine, I would have to go with my intuitiveness, and some would call it a futurist. I could see what would happen if I did it a certain way, and I could see the pattern of cause and effect, which came so easily to me, but wasn't able to explore till my age now to openly talk about it to younger people. Is you could predict the outcome of how the classroom's counting desk would turn out and how you could fake your way through public readings and how you would strategically place yourself in a classroom when you had an opportunity not to be the first one called upon.
Yes.
Or how the survival in classrooms would be, you would listen to everyone's take on a assigned reading in junior high. And then I would have my own spin based on all the stuff I just heard. I think some could call that a politician or BSing or something, but I saw it as, I'm going to take everyone's observation and I'm just going to say, why did that happen? And then when you contribute, that's what I realized now all teachers wanted was people contributing to the conversation.
I thought that you mentioned that in the book, and I thought that was really great to point out. And again, something that nobody taught you to do, like your mom, or maybe she did, I don't know, mom or dad said, hey, why don't you go chat with all your friends and see what they think? That was something that came from within you. And then you went on to say how that helped you in your business to really be able to gather other people's ideas and, you know, formulate your own, or be able to see that bigger picture because you asked so many questions.
I had a really good friend who even helped me do the advanced reader copy of this book and with some editing. He was my good friend when I was later in like high school, college, and I confided in him, and he made a few comments that helped me through my 20s. Was successful people who have reading difficulties or learning difficulties have learned at a younger age to rely on asking people questions and asking for help and asking for input. That sets you at a higher advantage when you're in a business, because you need others to grow a business. I didn't realize that's what I was doing. I was trying to survive, but it worked on the ability to ask people their opinion, in my opinion, and listen to what they had to say without interjecting my two cents, because I had no knowledge on the topic. I went that route. I know that others who hide their reading struggles in school might have been the bully, or they would have been the outspoken comedian because they were scared. My route was survival and competition and pretend I knew how to read when looking at words. Yeah, I'm going to say big words to this day. And the cool part with my book now is I can actually tell friends or anyone who says, can you sign the book? Okay, I know your name, but I do not know how to spell it. So yeah. I think it's being able to be open and tell people that, hey, it took us our whole lives to be this open. I don't expect young people to be this open.
Right. Yeah. And yet it's okay. Like, I think the first time I changed my LinkedIn profile to say that I was a dyslexic learner, I was afraid. But afraid of what? And that comes with time and with experience. I mean, there are going to be bullies out there. There are going to be people who want to put you down because of that difference. And as a young child, well, I have a lot of anxiety as well, so that would have been horrible. But to be able to move through that and see as an adult that it really is okay. And people's, I'm pretty sure that when people do that, it's because they themselves don't have an understanding of what you're talking about. That they themselves are afraid of what that word means. So again, part of my mission here, and of course of your book, is just to get that mission, that word out, that these differences can be celebrated. And I agree with you, like I could definitely tell as I was reading that book that it was less about dyslexia and much more about a struggle. And everybody has a struggle, but I think ours comes so early on in our lives that it seems for some like it is definitive for who we are, which it's not, but it just, because it occurs so early, it feels like there's, that's who we are. That's how we've always been. We don't know anything different.
You're right. And it is easier now to speak up. And I know it's hard for those going through it. And I really want to emphasize the struggle to parents that it's okay to let your kids struggle. If you take away all struggles, I don't even want to make a prediction, but my future self would say they're not going to be set up for success. You're going to set them up for a lot of disappointment. And since you and I and others who struggled with the side of decoding reading in school, we knew that at a younger age than most. Mm-hmm. And it allowed us to persevere through that. I didn't want to talk about the braggish side of dyslexia in the book. And I'm going to be, you're the first show I've told this to, because you are a fellow dyslexic. Is if I did that, then you could disconnect from readers who still haven't understood what their, I called it the superpower is. Mm-hmm. I love listening to audiobooks at a higher speed. I don't know if you can. I've been talking to a lot of dyslexics who haven't tried that yet, but I can digest the book really fast. And I've done that in school settings. I've talked to different groups, and a kid at the end asked the question, would you take it away? And I had played the audiobook at the time 3.5 speed, because Audible has actually grown in allowing you to go faster. And I said, why would I take that away? I can read a book faster than you now. Mm-hmm. But not everyone can do that. And I think over time, you can develop those skills when you have a better understanding. You're not going to see it in the second grade. But it's frustrating to me to be that one standing up and saying, look at what I can do. And I never wanted to do that with my businesses in my book or talking about my success in business, because I've had failures. But it was to say, you can achieve something. Especially if you're in the classroom setting, or you have parents or anyone who's telling you, you have to do this to succeed. You're outside the box thinking, could say, well, there's that one author who went on and made a couple businesses and he didn't need all this. You know, that's the perspective I'm looking for.
I think that's a very good perspective to have and to support. And like you said, that the failures, we as parents, I've got three children of my own, and going through what I went through in school, which actually, you know, I was put in the higher groups, but I think a lot of that was an intuitive sense about things, not actually being able to read well, but that's another story. I know that we want our kids to not have that struggle, but yet understand that it's important. I mean, because I know how hard it is to go through that. But because of that struggle is why I'm successful, because I had to find alternative ways. So I guess that's what we need to do, is we don't need to do it for our kids, or we don't need to make sure that every single time our kid gets an A, but we need to teach them the tools or make sure that they're supported so that they feel like they can move on to that next level. So, you know, I think that looks like different things for different people, but I'll give you an example. I read a lot of parent group questions talking about foreign languages, or talking about how is my kid going to learn an instrument? And I shake my head and I'm like, why? Why can't they? If the child is interested, or the child, first of all, they need to have some exposure. But why are we going to put a limit on them that because they're dyslexic or because they have X, Y, or Z challenge, they can't do this and they need to be exempt from this class?
I have to think those parents did not have dyslexia or any learning challenge, and they have the woe is me mindset. I get a distaste for that. I get a distaste when you put out your story in a book and people who haven't even read it start criticizing it. And I'm like, you didn't even get what? My biggest one is I've seen in one of those groups, and it's will frustrate me, was when they said, why are we positively talking about people like Richard Branson? You know, I talk about him in my book, and billionaire dyslexic. I needed him to look up to. And I didn't even know I was dyslexic when I was looking up to him. And when you can look up to a billionaire and say he did it, I can do it. It's just the dreamers. You're squashing their dreams. You're squashing the ability to believe that anything's possible. And I think about, I don't know where our youth will be in the future. I really don't know. That's why I'm posing it. If you're a parent and you squash your kids' dream of anything, right. You're supposed to encourage kids.
Absolutely. And I deal personally with someone who calls himself a realist, and that he would say something like, you can't be the president of the United States. You're just a normal person. Well, but we can't take that. Like, first of all, you don't know that. Like, yeah. We don't know that. And second of all, you can't take that imagination away from your child, because we don't know what they can do. I work with little ones who maybe aren't walking yet at 3, 4, 5. I have one who wasn't walking until 9 years old. And the doctors tell their parents, if your child's not walking by 3, they won't be able to walk. And I don't know what research study says this. And the parents feel so devastated when we hear this. And I get that that's like a really big, like, obvious thing that the kid can't walk. But reading challenges, learning challenges are no different. When we set these limits for our kids, or try to get them out of having to figure it out for themselves because we want to save them the failure, I agree, we're not doing them a service in the long run. So,
it's what I talked about as a thank you to my family was, I was the one who was selling Halloween candy back to my sister in November after talking her out of it, on Halloween night. Now, I say it that way. I felt it was negotiation. Obviously, looking back, or my mom talking about it, it might have been more of just really persuasion. She would call it manipulation, but I call it persuasion. My parents really encouraged me to be my cool skills of doing businesses in my room and doing different things. They said, you're good at it. I had family members. I had an uncle who said, you're going to be a millionaire one day. And I didn't even know what that was, but when you have that encouragement, when a child has all that internal struggle of hopelessness or the ability of something's wrong or why am I not like others, and you have the positive encouragement, someone who can focus on that one positive thing, that's through my life, is the words you say have a lot of impact, but the ones that have the most, you may not even remember saying. Mm-hmm. Those friends I told you about who encouraged me, when I talked to them later in life, they don't remember having that conversation of encouragement. They just had a conversation with me. Mm-hmm. So the impact of when a parent says, you can't do this, well, that's why I also taught in my book that, is you can take the can out of your life by focusing on how can you. And if you tell your kid, you're coming from your own lens of your own life, but I was in school and they said, this is how you're going to be successful. And I called BS and I said, nope, I got to do it on my own, because I'm not going to be able to do all this, and how can I do it? And it changed my life by focusing how I can become a business owner, that not that I can't.
Right. I think that's great. How can you do it? As my older child moved through school, one of the strategies that they used when figuring out a math problem was to simply start with what you know. And I think that that's such a really valuable tool, even for dyslexic learners or for any kid with a learning challenge, is start with what you know. Begin with what is working well for you. And then, you know, what comes next? I'm working with a little boy right now who's doing really well reading phonetically, but his comprehension of what he's reading is poor. So, all right, let's start with what you're doing well. And can we maybe listen to the story and imagine it and get a picture in our head first? And he's a really cool drawer. He really does nice artwork. So let's start with that entryway and then grow from there. So, you know, your, again, intuitive sense that you really liked business and you liked that negotiation and you were good at it gave you more practice, which is kind of like a self-fulfilling, you gained enjoyment from it. You wanted to do more of it. And then you can, mm-hmm. You got better. And the same thing for our kids, like maybe reading books in a book isn't going to be the thing that they are best at, but there's something else that they can do really cool things. So, well, that's great that your book does highlight that a lot. You also said something really interesting in your book about nonfiction writing. Can you share with us why you prefer nonfiction writing compared to fiction?
It's because even it's what I gravitated to as a child. I realized when I was writing this book and the earlier renditions of it, I read the business briefs in the newspaper, and I would ask what the big words were to people around me. And business briefs were short, simple, to the point. And I also thought about that. What little kid reads business briefs? So it was because I had this anchor and this idea of, I'm going to be a business owner. I'm going to be a millionaire one day. I'm going to do this. So I have to know about business because that's the only way. And if you watch history, and I loved history, all the American dream of coming to America, and then, or anyone who wants to have a business can, allowed me to gravitate towards business. So I gravitated to nonfiction. If you can't dive deep into a book and it wasn't read to you, where would you have the fantasies of different books? And that's why I didn't like the fantasies, because even with that, I could watch it on TV. So I preach it because you got to find what your children's good at. And if your children loves fantasy and fiction, go for it. I'm just saying, I personally don't. That one line had more controversy with parents than anything else I wrote. And you read the whole book was, well, I don't know if I agree with his nonfiction. Well, nonfiction to me is reality. School systems teaching you to how to be an employee, basically. So why not go with the nonfiction? And it teaches you real life lessons. I know life lessons are in fiction, and I understand all that. And had I had Audible at that age, I would have probably had a different outlook on life and loved fiction.
And I'm not dissing you for this. In fact, I kind of agree. So when people talk about reading books and they get lost in the story and they imagine themselves in different places, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. That never happened for me. Maybe one or two books have I ever reached that level. This is how I know that, you know, for dyslexic learners, yes, we can learn to read, and some people learn to read very well and really enjoy reading, and that's great, because you work on those things that are harder, and as you develop those new neural pathways, you can improve. Absolutely, you can. But for me, just like you said, learning about facts and science. I'm not so much in history, but I would more like the science is so fascinating to me that my husband thinks I'm a complete nerd, that I enjoy listening to these books. I would listen to a podcast on neuroscience over watching a TV program or watching a movie any day of the week. That's just where my interests lie. So again, whatever your child is drawn to, use that as an entry point, because we need the child to develop some internal motivation. It can't always come from the outside, because like you said, especially what you said about people talking to you and you picked up on something and that sparked something within you, that conversation with you, with your friends, was not meant to teach you a lesson, but yet you gained a lesson from what they said. And all those little teachable moments are surrounding us every day with our kids. And we just need to take advantage of that with the example of what we're doing and what we're saying to them, because those words are important. So thanks for clarifying that, but I agree with you.
Well, that's good.
So you already talked about, what drew you to your career choice here. And you told us a lot about with your dyslexia as a child. I guess looking back at it now, is there anything that you would have changed or wish would have gone differently for you regarding learning to read, or?
No, because I think I'm going to be a beacon of hope for those. To be very clear, I never said I learned to read, and that's why people say, I don't get it. Can you still read? No, I said I've done a lot of workarounds all the way to my 30s. Discovered Audible in my 30s. I'm 38 now, and it was 32, and started digesting book after book and improved everything. And it gave me the confidence and ability to finish my own that everyone talks about that I've ever met says, I'm going to write a book one day. And when you tell people an idea, oh, I'm going to write a book, years in advance, people start talking about themselves. This is just my ideas. There's a lot of people just want to talk about themselves. But no, I believe I was given this life to inspire the next generation. And that's what I talked about the futurist in my book is I don't know why, but it was times that I cried the most was I got to help someone else. And that helping mentality I know was really learned by my father who helped people selflessly. And if my struggle didn't happen, I wouldn't appreciate it. When things come easy, you get arrogant. And that's why I've had setbacks in business, because business comes so easy to me that others don't understand what I'm doing. And it also allows me to have a chip. I'm not a chip. That's a bad one. No, arrogant. And that's why I fail sometimes. Even if I could see down the road, I'll get through that. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I hope that I'm not losing your listener on that. But the reality is, no, I wouldn't change anything, because I believe anyone can pick up an audiobook now if you struggle and listen to reading and follow along with the physical copy or Kindle copy or ebook and do what you could have done in school. Mm-hmm. Because phonetic decoding, it will never happen for me. But what they taught us was repetition. And over time, I don't know how to sound out the words, but I've memorized them all that are used. And the more you broaden your base of words, the more you can speak to other people.
Right. So that's, you know, the science of reading has been there since the 30s. And now with functional MRIs, we can see actually what is being done in our brains. And so our schools are just now slowly starting to catch up with what the science has been there for us. But the sight word, I mentioned this in a previous podcast, you know, a sight word that we teach in school outright, there are no sight words from the beginning. You have learned to read by sight and by rote memorization just through repetition, but how much of a struggle, how much effort you had to put out to do that. And of course, I realize that you don't know any different, that's the way you need to read, but that's very effortful. And to be able to hold on to all of those words, now those sight words you have are solid, but like you said, to learn a new word, to read it phonetically, you can't still. And I would argue that if we got you through a OG program or a Barton program, you could learn to read phonetically.
I joke that because of this book, I've had a program, I won't name the name, but I did they're helping me with tutoring because they were fascinated if their program would work. That mental block of, well, I can time 3.5 the audiobook and be done with this faster than what I'm doing right now. You know that workaround when you get to a level of this age? I would hope that parents just open their minds and try different things and don't give up on the idea of what reading really is.
Exactly. Yeah, we have reading through different ways. But our brains are neuroplastic. That's another thing that was an old myth that our brains can't change, can't grow, and that's not true. Thankfully so, as a pediatric physical therapist, I need that neuroplasticity in our brains to exist. But you're right. To whatever you're trying to teach your child, and you said, you as the parent, you as the teacher are coming to the table with a set of preconceived notions of things that worked or didn't work in your life. And naturally, that's what you go to first for instruction. Well, so I'm a very visual person. When I was trying to teach my son, who has more significant dyslexia than myself, to like picture the word in his head, he can't. He has an inability to use that mind's eye to see the word, to recall the word. And so I was at a loss at that point because that was my strategy. Mm. And now he couldn't do that. So now what do? I had nothing to offer him as a way to help. So I think as a parent who either doesn't have dyslexia or who doesn't share the same struggle as your child, you really feel desperate and feel like, how in the world will your child make it? But you are a perfect example of how, because of these dyslexic benefits that you have developed and honed, you have exceeded, I wouldn't say your own expectations, because you always had high expectations for yourself. But the same thing I can see with my child too, because in the sixth grade now, he has learned so much about technology, and he has learned so many ways himself of what, how he learns best. And he will tell me that my strategy and my suggestion isn't helping him. He'll just tell me now that that doesn't help me, Mom. Okay. Thank you for letting me know. Then what does help you? And in having that conversation, how can we help you move forward? What do you need now? And working together to find that is, again, a different way of thinking about learning and to be open to those other options, like you said. Well, you've already talked about, you've answered all my questions, Will, so that's wonderful. What other message would you like to take, whether it's from your book or something you didn't mention for our audience today?
Well, one I was thinking about was how this all started for this book. If you believe what everyone else is complaining about, then you will just be like everyone else. I've had a lot of business management type people. I'm not even calling owners. I'm going to have to say people complain and say workers nowadays. They don't want to work. I paused, I took a breath, and I looked at it outside the box the same way I look at every other problem. And I can brag that you may have that problem in your company. And if you have a quote unquote support system, now I've worked at other jobs too where I didn't have that support system. But if you have that support system that doesn't believe in the worker, maybe you should find a different job, one. But two, everyone has to read that customer service book, The Customer Rules, in my company, and it works. And it started from a dyslexic kid who struggled in school and make people read. I've had one or two people not like that, but it's my company. You don't have to work for me. You have millions of other options to work anywhere. If I was the only employer, I could see that as being a problem. But I want to encourage those to say, if you keep going along with what the popular made up argument is, then you're going to be right. You can't. And if you say, why don't I do something outside the box, then you might be dyslexic. And mine was, I'm going to make people read. And I never in my wildest futurist dreams would thought it would lead to us even having this conversation. It was all trying to solve a problem different than everyone else and not accepting that society says workers are lazy or young people. I don't see it that way. And I guess why I wouldn't make a good politician, because I talked about wanting to be the president when I was younger because my father, but I see both sides, and that's maybe dyslexia or just me. I can see every side. I can see the cause and effect, and some of it just doesn't make sense to me to say, why are you complaining? Just go do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, that's for sure. And in our world today, it can feel really overwhelming, and it's very easy to be reactive and complain because that's like maybe the most comfortable thing to do. It's difficult to really view it from somebody else's viewpoint. A lot of us don't have the ability to open our mind that way. Go ahead.
Can I share something that I haven't shared on any other podcast about my book? And yes, you've read it. Thank you for reading it in advance.
Yes.
I told a story in a way that I can see everyone's confirmation bias. And if you don't understand, you know what confirmation bias is. But for your listeners who don't, confirmation bias is simply stated as you use your own biases to confirm your own outlook on life. I can tell where someone's coming from the second they start talking about my book if they've read it. I know the personality type and I know their confirmation bias. I know the people who are negative outlooks on life, and I know people who can see the positive. I have not had one message that is the same about my book because someone else picked up. Every person I've talked to who's came to me has picked up something different from the book. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was my own social experiment to seek people's confirmation bias. I don't talk about it because that was my hidden experiment, but I don't talk about all the experiments I've ran in my life in this book because it wasn't about experiments. Mm-hmm. But the reality is I'm not here to tell you how to learn to read. I'm here to say that there is light on the end of the tunnel and there's different systems and it may not work for you, but that doesn't mean that you should give up or it doesn't mean you should blame the school system or teachers. I've never bashed the teachers. I never bashed the school system. I when I talk about the school system in general, I didn't talk about this in my book, but over the podcast, it was a factory mindset. We've heard that one, right? It was created in the Industrial Revolution. So as a business owner, I would say with a 1 in 5 output of non-readers coming out of school, then I think you should fix it because no other product could have that much quote-unquote defects, which I'm not right. saying the people are defective, the system is, and still survive. We should look at innovative ways, and I want to champion the cause for school districts that don't accept or embrace technology mm-hmm. for letting their kid have audible books in the classroom. I've heard those are the ones that I gravitate towards on those groups is people who say they told my kid they couldn't listen to a book. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. But just in general, I'm not here to preach that this is how you should learn to read, but I would like to inspire those to say, I was told that everything you ever learn in life, you can read about. And I want to be the beacon of hope that you can now listen to about, you can now decode about, you can listen on YouTube, you can have people help you. There's so many tutoring programs. There's so many opportunities that didn't exist 30 years ago.
Right. No, this is so very true. And I think, like you said, like to have that approach of, oh, woe is me, or put the blame on somebody else, that will not serve you unless you were going to go ahead and be an advocate or make some change. But just to complain for the sake of, you know, my student's teacher, my kid's teacher just doesn't get it, and I'm just going to whatever. I understand your struggle. I understand the desire to have it be something different, but unless you're going to actually take some action to move the needle forward or to make some change, complaining for the sake of complaining is futile. So this, you know, your book is definitely one way to hopefully open your mind even just a little bit. And I'm really big on planting seeds. So if things that we're saying today rub you the wrong way or make you think, you know, wonder why we would be saying this, I think, yay, good. Thank you for keep listening. And maybe you'll think about it a little bit differently tomorrow, or maybe not. But, you know, it's not like we're right and you're wrong or vice versa. Like, these are just all different viewpoints and things that I learned today are going to help me tomorrow. I mean, I have a way different view, you know, outlook on dyslexia and learning challenges and how this relates to my work as a physical therapist than I did 10 years ago. But that's just through continual learning. And like you said, not out of a book, not out of a book that I read with my eyes. I didn't read a book for over 10 years because it's just too much work for me. And then I started listening to audiobooks and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wasted 10 years of my life not reading.
It's, you know what? I hope that someone, you said something that I hope everyone pays attention to, is we feel that it was a waste of all those years that we didn't read. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I felt like it was a waste of my 20s when I was slowly reading through books. But I want everyone to be encouraged to try something different. Pick a book up that you wouldn't normally pick up. If you have a problem with the subject, find someone who has an opposing opinion. If you don't like a candidate right now during this, during election, then listen to the opposing opinion books just to see where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. Because the joy of reading that you and I are both talking about that we have in this age, we wish we had it when we were younger.
Sure.
And
no, that's true.
Yes.
It has been a pleasure to talk with you today. Will, thank you so much for writing that book. And I also have a few books that I want to get done, so that you have been an inspiration for me just to like actually do that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you have a great rest of your day. And yeah, everybody should check out his book, I Can't Read. And it was a good read or a good listen.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye.
Today's quick tip.
Hey, welcome to the Dyslexically Successful quick tip of the day. I think I'm actually going to settle on a name for this segment. reading outside of the book, or like, so kind of a play in words of reading outside the box or thinking outside the box. So this will be like reading outside of the book. So kind of a working title for right now, but we'll see where it goes. So if you have a better idea, by all means, please share it with me. And today we're going to talk about vocabulary words. So once you get your child reading and they are, you know, no longer needing to sound out or tap out each sound, and they can read the words more fluently, you may start to see some difficulties with comprehension because they don't quite understand the meanings of the words. So what we did this week in tutoring was we made a little vocabulary binder, or a little vocabulary bank of words. And so you kind of go ahead and scan through your reading passage that your child's going to do either for homework or for fun. And then, you know, see if maybe you can identify some words that they may not know, or in our tutoring session, I have my student go ahead and look and see and scan if there's any words that he doesn't know, and then we can underline those. So some words that he was unsure of were words like plump, squint, grub, in the sense of like a larva, dusk. And so these were words that were in a reading passage, and some of these words in the reading passage aren't really words that we use in everyday language. In fact, it might be words that aren't really used at all right now, but because they kind of follow the rules that we're learning in the reading lesson, that was what we have. So for a blimp, you know, we looked it up online. I was able to pull up a Google image of what a blimp was, and then he was able to draw a picture. Again, one of the words was swill, and I also had to look up that. You know, myself from context clues, I can understand what that word meant, and you can encourage your reader to do the same thing, but it also would be good to go back through and make sure that what you think the word means is really what it means. And in this case, it's the watery food that the pigs eat. So, you know, then they have this to read or to refer back to when they're reading that passage. And just a good way to help grow their vocabulary. So this is important for comprehension, because if you know how to read the word of what you see, but you have no meaning behind that word, the whole paragraph isn't gonna make much sense. Or you end up substituting words that you can recall that make more sense to you. So a lot of times dyslexic readers will do that. They don't know how to read exactly the word that they see, but they kind of insert a word that happens to be something similar in meaning. But in this case, for the vocabulary words, it was such a struggle to get through the reading passage because my student didn't have an understanding of what these words meant. So when they described in the setting that this was happening at dusk, and the little frog was smug sitting on his pad, the whole sentence, the whole paragraph didn't have any meaning for him. So once we kind of were able to look up what these words were and draw some pictures of understanding, then we could create a picture in our head, and then we got comprehension. So this is a next step, but as soon as your reader is starting to come across words that they're unsure of, or you know, you're asking questions about what happened in the story, and your reader has no idea what's going on, most likely some of these vocabulary words are not creating any sort of image or picture for them, and then comprehension can't come from there. So go ahead and try that with your reader, with your student or your child, and you know, make it fun. In this case here, I just poked a hole through the flashcards index cards, and I secured it with a pipe cleaner. But you could do something similar on fold pieces of paper in a binder. You could do something, maybe multiple pictures on one page. And so take advantage of your students' love for drawing and for creativity, and really get out some nice markers and really make it a nice activity for them to help enhance their understanding and meaning of these words. And now that they're doing such a great job reading, now we just need that comprehension piece.